You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education Rankings podcast special, where we're looking at the 2014 Asia University Rankings. My name's Chris Parr. I'm joined by Phil Beatty, THE Rankings editor, and John Morgan, deputy news editor, who's been following this story for the magazine. Phil, we'll come to the top five in just a second. Don't want to give too much away too soon. Why do we have an Asia-specific rankings? Why do we need it?
Well, it's the same old story, really. I think that people just are really hungry for our data. We produce the World University Rankings. They're hugely popular all over the world. Governments are increasingly using our rankings to help set economic growth strategy, you know, to benchmark their university's performance. And I think what we found in Asia is actually there's a really serious drive across the region to build world-class universities, to put universities at the center of economic growth, obviously in places like China, where we've been hearing about it for a long time now, but across Southeast Asia, Thailand, trying to use its universities to get out of the middle-income trap, a lot of them trying to ensure they have competitive universities to fuel economic growth. And the fact remains that there's not that many Asian universities in the world rankings. I think the absolute dominance of North America and Western Europe in the traditional rankings means there are many Asian universities with great aspirations, with really exciting, dynamic, upward trajectories that are not quite visible, but really want this benchmarking data, want to see where they stand. So we went deeper into the region. There's actually only 20 Asian universities in the world top 200, and there's only 61 in the top 400 we publish in October. So this actually provides a lot more data on a wider and deeper range of Asian universities, and it's really down to popular demand. People want this material, and it helps really build a richer picture.
Well, let's put people out of their misery. The top five this year are, in order, number one, the University of Tokyo, number two, the National University of Singapore, three is the University of Hong Kong, four is Seoul National University, and five is Peking University. The top three is actually the same as last year, some stability there, but Seoul is up from eighth to fourth, which in turn pushes Peking down from fourth to fifth. Obviously, they're all sort of East Asian institutions. John, you've covered this in the magazine. What trends did you observe in your piece?
Well, broadly speaking, the trend is there's an increased number of Chinese universities entering the rankings, and a number of Japanese universities missing out. So the overall balance seems to be possibly a shift in power from Japan as the major higher education nation in East Asia, with towards China in second spot, but gaining ground. And it's likely that China's rapidly increasing spend on research funding would be a factor here. And I spoke to Thomson Reuters, who collects and analyzes the data for the rankings. They said China was seeing only modest gains in citation impact and reputation in the rankings, despite the big increases in government funding. But nevertheless, Thomson Reuters thought there is a definite trend over recent years, and that's expected to continue in the fact that there are these incremental increases in reputation and citation impact for Chinese universities. And having spoken to a couple of academic experts who look at international higher education, they pointed out that public spending in Japan has been really constrained for a number of years because of the wider economic situation. Higher education and research have seen funding cuts, and sort of Japan's share of the most highly cited papers falling. But meanwhile, in China, you've got this massive increase in funding for research, and the Chinese government is seeing universities as a hedge against a slowing economy. You spend on universities, you'll get kind of a reward in economic growth, and they're a sort of key focus of soft power. That China's economic strength is respected internationally, but it's kind of universities and a range of things in soft power that really impress the international community and can open doors and increase China's status.
Sure. Yeah, we had Jamil Salmi as well comment on these findings. He's an education economist and author of the book The Challenge of Establishing World-Class Universities. He says that Japanese universities are just not hungry enough, have no sense of urgency, which is pretty risky in such a highly competitive environment, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Tokyo in March this year, and I had the privilege of spending some time at Tokyo University, which is the number one Asia university, and is an exceptionally strong university. But even there was a genuine sort of slightly gloomy air. You know, they have really depressed salaries. They can't compete on salary with even the private universities within Japan, let alone these booming Singaporean and Chinese and South Korean universities. They trading on the huge prestige and esteem of the university within Japan to keep hold of the top scholars, but they're not competitive there. I think governance structures are a problem. There's a very democratic system of electing your leaders, but I think that does lead to conservatism. They're finding it hard to make change. They're finding it hard to be dynamic because faculty have so much power. And there was a sense even at the very top that China is catching up, and they felt that, you know, it was almost inevitable that will happen. But to be fair, at least they have identified some of those problems, and there is a government-backed campaign to internationalize Japanese universities more. I think the problem was they had such incredible success and were so far ahead of everybody else in Asia for the, you know, during the sort of technology-driven economic boom, that they have got a bit complacent. And of course, current economic circumstances mean they've not had the investment that their rival nations have had.
So there is some government backing. John mentioned government backing in China as well, which takes us rather nicely onto India. We have a supplement out with these rankings, as we do with all of our rankings, and writing is in that supplement is India's Secretary for Higher Education, Ashok Thakur. And he sort of points out something that we've known for a while, that the President of India is very keen on universities taking these rankings very seriously. He's made it a matter of policy that all institutions in the country have to participate wholeheartedly in the rankings process. And that's yielded some reward in these rankings, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've seen a massive increase in India's representation in the top 100. They had 3 last year and they've got 10 this year. And actually, if you look at the data, it's not because they've all suddenly got better. It's simply because they've actually decided for the first time to take part in the process. Mm. We have a very sort of honest system where we engage directly with each individual university to share data. A lot of the data is independent of the universities, but we ask them to volunteer, to take part, to give us basic institutional information. And India's been slow in accepting that and joining the process, but actually this year far more of them have taken part, and I'm glad to say that we're collecting now already for next year. And there's even more. So I think it's very good news for India on the sense that they just get the data they need to benchmark themselves, to understand where they stand in the world, to really look at their strengths and weaknesses, because we are using 13 performance indicators across the whole range of a university's activity. So they get to actually really drill into that and understand their performance. And I think when they do that, although it's great news they've got a higher representation, there are still some real problems for India. And I know I'm actually heading there after this conversation. I'm getting on a plane to Delhi, but John spent some time in India earlier this year and had a good look around, so I don't know what you think.
Having been to India and China, you can really see the gulf between the two nations. Universities obviously are the kind of the biggest economic powers in Asia, but in terms of the quality and look of the universities when you walk around them, China is miles and miles ahead. The best universities look like a Western university, and even some of the leading Indian institutions like the IITs look sort of almost decaying and quite ramshackle. Although I was very impressed by the ISA that I saw in India, which kind of offers some suggestion that there's been real investment in labs and facilities for some Indian institutions, but I think in India, definitely this source of kind of regret and almost embarrassment that they're not on the same level as China in terms of university performance and research.
It seems like there is a change. You know, they have promised a much greater proportion of their GDP will be spent on research. They have tried to say that the universities will get a greater share of research funding. They'll be integrating university research and industry research better. And there's a whole lot of quality assurance procedures being put in place. So the signs are quite positive, and certainly the engagement with rankings themselves suggest a willingness to share good practice, to benchmark themselves. I think the signs are pretty good for India, but they're certainly a long way behind the likes of China in terms of the infrastructure and the quality of faculty and things like that.
Mm-hmm. No, it is a true Asia ranking. It encompasses the Middle East as well. Which is quite well representative. Quite well represented. Five nations from the region make it onto the list. Turkey's a big player. Where else, Phil, in that region is punching? At least not above its weight, but with its weight.
I think Iran was a nice example. There's three universities from Iran. Sharif University of Technology is the number one in Iran. It's comfortably in the top 40, in 37th. It does seem like there's a little bit of a research renaissance taking place in Iran. Certain areas like mathematics are actually doing exceptionally well in terms of the bibliometric analysis. Saudi Arabia's got three universities. King Abdulaziz University in 53rd is quite impressive, and that doesn't take into account the King Abdullah University of Science and Technology, which of course has got a $10 billion investment. They'll probably make an impact in the rankings in coming years. And the American University of Beirut in Lebanon is represented as well. So there's a pretty reasonable showing of universities from the region. But I think I can exclusively reveal to you, Chris, as a Times Higher podcast exclusive, we are really seriously looking into a Middle East, North Africa ranking for the future. I think there are unique circumstances, unique local priorities in terms of what kind of things they'd like to see benchmarked, what kind of performance indicators they'd like to see, perhaps with a more of a focus on graduate employability, local economic and social impact. So I think we are looking to develop a regional ranking for the Middle East and North Africa. So watch this space.
You heard it here first. You can read the top 100 in the supplement that's distributed with Times Higher Education this week. You'll, of course, find it online as well at timeshighereducation.co.uk/WUR. That's for World University Rankings, of course. You can follow the results and discussion about it via our Twitter account too. That's THE World Uni Rank. It's on Facebook as well. And you can, of course, find the Times Higher Education groups and company pages on LinkedIn, where you'll also hear more discussion about the findings. But that's all for this THE Asia University Rankings podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.